Hello, and welcome to Literally from the North Shore. We continue today with the Bowser Chronicles, written by Two Harbors native Glenn Sandvik and read for us by KTWH volunteer Tom Kohler. Continuing now where Tom left off yesterday.
A sister tug, the Niagara, on the Knife Isle aground, the Hopkins, an apostle's wreck, when with timber downbound, the Ben Noble, which disappeared in 1914, Bowser was sure just where she'd sunk. The treacheries of Isle Royal were given witness by the manifest of able ships which that cat there saw die. The Monarch one December struck and was broken in two. The Kamloops, a few winters more, vanished till spring no clue. The Glenyon and the Steinbrenner to nor'easters fell prey, and at the Regal Isle each spent her final fateful day. As sorry, though no man died, was the wreck of George M. Cox. The luxury liner met her end on Rock of Ages rocks. Bowser, superior watch cat, saw many lake boats die. Two diverse Isle Royal wrecks stuck in his mind and his eye. First, the packet America on the North Shore, well known, from Duluth down to Thunder Cape, where she brought comforts home. On a spring night in 28, the lake, as smooth as glass, the America kissed a shoal and started sinking fast. They tried to beach her, hit a ledge, stuck a stone's throw from ground, though passengers and crew were safe. A dog Bowser knew drowned. That cat and island residents the steamer's loss would mourn. Hers was the passing of a friend which left lake folks forlorn. Yet that summer America, as she slid down her ridge, also provided fresh produce from nature's icy fridge. Bold fishermen braved the lake's cold, dove to the galley trunk, fed their families fruits, vegetables fresh as the day they sunk. A quarter century later, to the month just about, off Isle Royal's eastern coast, the lake once more won out. The loser, Henry Steinbrenner, for 5 decades had plied the Great Lakes iron trades, wherein with nature she had vied. But when the Steinbrenner, awash, sent out her call, May Day, the lake was quick to claim its prize, and the ship slipped away. That tug and that cat responding steamed to the sinking spot, where keen-eyed Bowser peered and saw a boat small as a dot. Because of him, the captain and 4 more crewmen were saved, and once again lake denizens about that watch-cat raved. Bowser, that dog-eared sentinel aboard the Edna G, came to recognize every fleet that sailed the inland sea. Lakes, fleets, like church congregations and tribes and ethnic sets, displayed characteristics which marked each one from the next. Some wore distinctive emblems on their stacks or on their stems, while some bore names of men of wealth, their heirs, and their good friends. Still others were distinguished by the tracks their masters made, or by the towns their crews called home, or where their keels were laid. That cat knew best the Steel Trust boats, which from Two Harbors hauled, a vast array of iron ships, tin stackers most were called. The Pittsburghers, of course, all were just like the Edna G, pistons which drove the behemoth of the steel industry. Bowser knew, too, was known by Interlake and Kinsman, by Buckeye and Columbia, which loaded now and then. By Bethlehem, Wilson Transit, whose crews dressed all in blue, by Ford Motor and Cleveland Cliffs and Great Lakes Transit, too. He watched the Northern Lines as well, Canada's steamships, black Algoma carriers, each with a Bruin upon her stack. Packet fleets and general freight lines were by that watch-cat known. Banners of Booth and Dominion were at Agate Bay flown. the masters of the jack and ace of the famed poker fleet could sometimes be spotted along the small port town's main street. Yes, Bowser, ever vigilant aboard the Edna G, recognized all fleets near all boats which sailed the inland sea. While that lake, that tug, and their pulse e'er set that cat's heart throb, Bowser again cultivated a life outside his job. He resumed rounds round the port town, to his pre-war haunts went, made new friendships, reaffirmed old, with the Duke much time spent. Those bosom pals again patrolled, cat and dog as one prowled, lent aid, found fun, with Bowser mute, while sometimes that hound howled. They'd rest and reflect in church lofts, at peace with men and God, then set out to take port life in, main streets and backyards trod. That most noble experiment, at taverns they observed, few took prohibition to heart, a fate perhaps deserved. Make no mistake, that watch-cat had liquor's harsh lessons learned, yet drink he never did disdain, rather drunkenness spurned. Bowser also caught the beat of the jazz age, words and sound, read Fitzgerald and Lewis when to the library bound. Woeful yet joyous tones and tunes would in that cat's ears hum. Jazz rhythm and its syncopation set his forepaws to drum. The music's magic drew folks to an inn not far from town, a citadel inn and of pine, its color scheme all brown. The White Caps, as the place was known, was like a movie scene. Flivvers dropped, flappers at its doors, bathed in the moonlight's sheen. Inside, clarinets, a saxophone, blew notes, both hot and cool. A smoke-wreathed piano jangled when jasmine manned its stool. Thus often on a Sunday's dawn, when music ceased to be, the cat jitterbugged, boogalooed back home to Edna G. Bowser watched port town politics and heard the day's debate waged by Edna G's winter club, whose members would orate. They'd give voice to the issues which drove their state and nation. Thus the tug's cuddy added strength to freedom's foundation. Democrats and Republicans contested for the floor, while reasoned discourse was the goal. Loudness oft counted more. And mid the rhetoric and din of politics mainstream, that cat also learned politics of the fringe and a dream. William Jennings Bryan enjoyed favor among town folk. Ignatius Donnelly, populist, true ardor could evoke. Twice for president, Eugene Debs carried the people's vote, and Roosevelt's Bull Moose ticket found friends on that tugboat. On home ballots, too, citizens with radicals kept touch, with communists and socialists, with Finns and Linds and such, Wobblies and other syndicalists for years put up a slate, which always challenged, never ruled, contented with that fate. A socialist, once mayor one, Chas Rufus was his name, yet while bankers and merchants buzzed, the town hall stayed the same. Then laborites with farmers formed a statewide dynasty. Two harbors helped elect men for whom the nation were key. So Bowser, though a working cat from a small working town, saw and heard politicians who were known the world around. Thus Humphrey and Mondale, when they as vice presidents sat campaigning with folks at home, were photographed with that cat. Prosperity and politics were fun in that cat's town until paper markets crashed and the whole world hoovered down. Two Harbors' depression was deep as Lake Superior, steel hearths as cold as the Great Lake, no longer called for ore. The iron trains and iron boats laid rusting, engines blocked for weeks and months, and then for years the Edna G was docked. Bowser watched as steam ran out of the port's economy. No work, no pay, day after day. Soon townsfolk were hungry. The hunger was the gnawing sort, ate at body and mind. When all the nation shared your fate, hope could be hard to find. The malaise infected creatures, four-legged as well as two. Even the carefree, raucous gulls in hard times sounded blue. Port children, like their mothers' soups, grew paler and more thin, yet scarcity prompted townsfolk to reach out, not turn in. At the house which the Duke called home, even transients were fed. Hobos lined up at the back stoop, from children received bread. Gluttony also reared its head in tragic occurrence, as Bowser saw among port cats in the storm fry incidents. A nor'easter tossed herring young high on a beach to flop. Hungry felines converged in lines to gorge fish without stop. The next day 14 cats returned to gulp herring and gloat, but dead fish dried and stiffened till bones lodged in a kit's throat. One meal had been a gift from God, the second greed inspired. Each cat choked slowly, painfully, with bellies full expired. Bowser, senses by hunger honed, watched hard times silently, saw an alphabet of relief surge to the inland sea. FDR offered hope after Hoover's dour countenance, determination, cocksure smile, a poor man's, rich man's stance. Roosevelt spoke from his heart to the hearts of working men and used Uncle Sam's full reserve to help them work again. It mattered not jobs were make work and just worked day to day. Families bought groceries, dignity through WPA. The tugboat's crew dug sewer lines around the small port town and rebuilt streets and sidewalks by laying cement mud down. A new high school rose, promising brighter futures for all. Laborers etched in bas-relief watched its performance hall. Yet youth who passed its doors still met recession's daunting face, for if their fathers had not work, where could be their workplace? Harold Ickles one answer found and named it CCC. Civilian Conservation Corps would help boys men to be. Across Minnesota's Arrowhead and Rolly's woods camps made, with military regime, pines planted and parks laid. As at Gooseberry Falls, where they built native stone ramparts, which long as monuments will stand to workers' hands and hearts. From depths of the Great Depression, the port would slowly rise, as once again iron trains rolled, sent steam clouds to the skies. The recovery was driven by the acts of one madman when U.S. Steel armed Britain to halt Hitler's fatherland. A cold Sunday on Edna G., the fireman and that cat kept coals beneath the boiler and heard Jack Benny's chit-chat. Then the name Pearl Harbor buzzed out of the radio, and all Americans prepared again to war to go. That war, that tug would stay at home, patriots' work to do, and Bowser, patriotic cat, would stay home with her too. Where iron trains and iron boats met cargoes to exchange, the ore docks hummed and iron drummed with the wealth of the range. That cat would stand his tugboat watch 24 hours a day as the harbor's pulse pounded and war's fevers soon held sway. Many Agate Bay men and boys signed up with Uncle Sam to take up arms, fight freedom's foes, and keep safe the homeland. While on the home front, those who stayed adopted army rules, so that even that tugboat's crew counted guns among their tools. Yes, armed guards patrolled the ore docks, spotting for subs and planes to keep swastikas, rising suns clear of commercial lanes. those townspeople whose husbands and whose sons answered the call, accepted wartime regimens with noble wherewithal. They smiled at nighttime blackout drills, coupons, and ration books. They'd weathered the Depression with just such stoic outlooks, but from the papers, the airwaves, new names, let old fears go. Normandy, the Marshalls, Guam, the hills round Anzio. Acts of war waged in worlds removed haunted all in the port. Altar candles and gold stars shone with each battle report. Among war's acts, which Bowser watched from his tugboat station, Eagle Olson's piracy would surely shock the nation. Eagle, a freshwater sailor, was Norway-born and bred. He'd long wintered at two harbors, took food and laid his head. But things weren't right in Eagle's head, as all would come to see. To deny his deeds were treason would have been heresy. A giant of the human breed in stature and in strength, he was a steel trussed second mate, renowned the Great Lakes length. One night an ore-filled laker left Duluth for Erie's shore, its cargo indispensable for a country at war. 'Twas Eagle's watch, the wheel was his, due north of Devil's Isle. He locked the cabin, called the chief, and with a self-sure smile, headed for home, the ship his own westward to Agate Bay. A patriot's crew, yet none so fool to contest Eagle's way. At dawn, the hijacked iron boat was greeted by that tug. Guided to berth, guarded by men who guns and clubs did hug, Eagle, locked in the pilot house, seemed pleased port chums to see. One by one, took them in to show his prize, his victory. Coffee and rum, stories told of changes in the town, soon lured Eagle with all his pals to take a stroll around. New books, new tools, a new bar tap, all toasted with a drink, inspecting the sheriff's new paint, brought Eagle to the clink. Cell doors clanged shut, his boat steamed off, war's triumphs to help find, while Eagle Olson lost the keys to freedom and his mind. Bowser kept through the war, named two, his mind and his eyes clear. His watchcat duties he performed to that tugboat stayed near. And unlike his dark memories of the war known as one, there'd be some times and some events which were just downright fun. One autumn day, 'neath sunny skies, set out the Edna G, taking steel moguls to Duluth, a loyalty show to see. Rich men from Pittsburgh, Chicago, who in war's pain found gain, on tour to inspect aspects of their vast steel trust domain. At one of half a dozen yards in the bustling twin ports, five ships that day slid down the way to salutes, gun reports. The docks and shores and ships rang out with shouts and songs and cheers. The Dion Quince, Canada-born, christened their sea sisters. The ace of aces soared overhead, young Richard Ira Bong, flying feats from Pacific skies, oohed and awed the port's throng. The local hero smiled and waved so near that all could see, then tipped his wings, climbed out of sight in his plane named Margie. Hollywood cameras caught the scenes, the hooplas and the hypes, to rally troops and folks at home around the stars and stripes. Later, as that tug headed home under a sky star-laced, Bowser closed his eyes, saw the flag, his heart with fervor raced. Yet, like the Edna G's fireman, whose son was at some front, and like so many, through the land, concern gnawed, pleasure blunt. No matter how the battles fared, nor how the rights, freedom's cause, fears ruled the world till families could, united in peace, pause. Bowser, reborn watchcat, would wait and watch for Edna G. On that tugboat's homecoming day, he scanned the inland sea, townspeople swarmed across her pier, lined up on the break wall. On an ore dock, George Olson peered, foreshadowing his fall. While through a glass her master spied, yet that cat's keen eyes caught the first glimpse of the vet's coal plume, a distant eastern spot. The Edna G steamed into view, then into Agate Bay. The city band played Sousa tunes, folks whistled and hoorayed. In simple ceremonies, with salutes and a handshake, the Navy returned that tugboat to work the greatest lake. Her captain and her railroad crew stepped gingerly from shore, eager yet unsure how that tug had weathered salt and war. The cat likewise padded aboard, his post to reassume. Though all looked as before, there were scents like a sealed tomb. The foreign airs, the must and rust, seeped from each pipe and seam, but were erased by elbow grease and much freshwater steam. Though the Navy had worked her hard, that fact was plain to see. Power and stamina remained, hallmarks of Edna G. But one part of that tug was gone, which Bowser long would mourn, a workboat's only luxury, her pride since she was born, the eagle of her pilot house screaming its bronze virtue. That symbolic bird had vanished, nobody knew where to. Perhaps a war prize taken home by a drafty to sell. Yes, both tug and cat testified that war could be true hell. Bowser, that watchful watch cat, and that tugboat Edna G, took up their peacetime vocations of iron delivery. Soldiers took up their former jobs on rails and in the ground. The small port clanged and hummed with prosperity new found. For while steel made in peacetime was the same as made in war, the social economic gains in peace seemed so much more. Along with jobs, doughboys took up wives and families as well. The cat watched such connubials, which jingled his heart's bell. Yes, Bowser, if the truth be told, sometimes pined for a mate, a female companion with whom to share life and fate. His homely, handsome, doggish mug, tawny coat, and sure bound, turned heads and thrilled hearts of felines, the great lake all around, and once or twice, or maybe more, his head was also turned by femme fatales whose visions were ever in his heart burned. For like Citizen Bernstein in Charlie Kane's movie tale, Bowser's keen eyes and keener mind would not let heartthrobs pale. A Sand Island lightkeeper's puss, a church cat from the Sioux, a barroom temptress in Duluth, a tofty spaniel, too. A fling or two, a dalliance he took was taken in. Of such were Bowser's memories of mates that might have been. Though that cat never took a bride, to no one spoke his heart. In fact, he never spoke, made of silence an art. Yet all who came to know him knew his one true love to be, that Lake Superior lady, that tugboat Edna G. That he-cat Bowser never quit his lifelong bachelorhood, but from that tugboat he watched and saw wedlock do much good. One marriage in particular stood out in that cat's mind for reforming an errant life, affirming humankind. The groom, Peter Olson O'Toole, Bowser knew in dark days, tossed from a ship in Toledo, the two had parted ways. Soon thereafter, sky pilot Pete gave his heart to a maid, a shopkeeper's straight-laced daughter, her locks a golden braid. For Marie he'd do anything, change his whole life around, entrusting love for Pete alone. Marie let her hair down. A bride, soon babies, and in them all pleasure he did take, and for their livelihood he worked all round the greatest lake. The highway hugging the North Shore had not yet been put through. It must have been the autumn of 19 and 22. O'Toole was second keeper at the famous Split Rock Light. His Marie and their three young ones kept his world shining bright. But brightness was in crisis, as light oil was out of stock. Northeast winds kept the Amaranth from mooring neath the rock. Peter O'Toole, nobody's fool, knew men in peril were without a light to pierce the night. All vessels faced danger. So O'Toole's bride and children shined a spot above his neck. With a tallow taper he climbed up to the lantern deck. All through that night at Split Rock Light a beacon lakeward shone. Pete's great bald head its brightness shed to guide ships safely home. Bowser, that tugboat watch cat, had for lighthouses an eye. Superior's beacons, like that tug, sailor's aid would supply. All lights round the lake called out their warnings to all ships. In silent tones each light's its own, decrying nature's grips. That cat knew best that beam which blazed across the agate bay, from the light as old as that tugboat, burning night into day. A golden shaft rotated from the red brick lantern tower, stretching horizons like clockwork 300 times an hour. Across the water the light shone, rebounding off the town, a brilliant calmness for that cat on that tug bedded down. Yet anywhere on the Great Lake, Bowser knew where he'd be by timing and intensity of rays over the sea. His keen cat eye a flash would spy long before men could note, so he'd ken sans compass or map the track of any boat. And unknown perils of the night round Superior's shore had their darkest secrets erased for miles and miles and more. From Split Rock on its sheer stone dome to sandy Whitefish Point, Menagerie to Mendota, each darkness would anoint. Harbor lights, Duluth to Marquette, the Portage Waterway, beacons throughout the Apostles on the Slates and Big Bay. That silent cat knew every light which, cross the Great Lake, shone with voiceless cries, unuttered sighs, a guiding echo's tone. Bold warning shouts, never called out, rang through the onyx air, the silent screams of lighthouse beams, beware, longships, beware.
We've been listening to Tom Kohler's reading of the Bowser Chronicles by Two Harbors native Glenn Sandvik. This was episode 4 of 5, so be sure to tune in again tomorrow for the final episode of this book. Thank you to the author's family and the publisher for permitting us to broadcast this poem. If you miss an episode this week, remember all the episodes are posted on our website, ktwh.org. The Literally from the North Shore page is found in the drop-down menu under Programs at the top of the page.